This show furnished by Rowan, Gervy, and Wynn.
It's time for Gervy's Law, the intersection of law and life, with your host, injury compensation attorney, author, and mentor, Alan Gervy. Alan is managing attorney at the law firm of Rowan, Gervy, and Wynn, a workers' compensation law firm who have represented injured workers for over 35 years. Joined today by his co-host, radio personality, and television host, Carrie Kasem. Carrie brings a fresh, real perspective to the intersection of law and life, turning Murphy's Law upside down. And now, here are Alan Gervy and Carrie Kasem.
Good afternoon, Los Angeles. And everyone listening all over the world on KBC.com. I am Alan Gervy, and I'm the managing partner of the law firm of Rowan, Gervy, and Wynn. And today, as usual, as the music stops, I'm here to tell you that I'm going to manage your life. And I can't do that alone. And Carrie Kasem, for the second week in a row, is not here. Not sure where she is. She hasn't called in sick. She hasn't told me where she's at. She's a busy, busy person, but I am so fortunate today because I have a guest co-host. It isn't Carrie Kasem. It's Caroline Mankey, and we are so thrilled to have Caroline with us today. She is an experienced trial lawyer, and she's represented clients in the entertainment industry, the arts industry, fashion, retail, just about everywhere. She works for the Ackerman Law Firm, and she has been named top intellectual property lawyer in California in 2017. She's National Law Journal's list of intellectual property trailblazers, super lawyer as I am, and she's probably a super lawyer more for longer than I have been. She's just been in this business. And what's really interesting about you, Caroline, is you've got an interesting past. Just like me, I was on the Oprah show. I admit it. You can look it up. You can see me on Oprah two times, one of Oprah's favorite guests, not. And I was a DJ on a cruise ship. I was a stripper on a cruise ship. And I'm not saying you're a stripper, please. But Caroline, first of all, welcome to Gervy's Law.
Thanks, Alan. I'm so happy to be here.
It's crazy. You've had like two lives. Tell us how you got into law, what you were doing back then, and now you are one of the top intellectual property lawyers in town.
I have had two lives, at least.
At least.
I started out after college working in the music industry, and I went to law school thinking that I was going to be some hotshot music transactional lawyer. I was going to show everybody and represent all the big famous rock stars.
Right.
And of course, life takes its course in a way that you never imagine.
Absolutely.
And I got out of law school and started practicing law and found out that I loved being a trial lawyer. I really love the theater of trial and jury trials. And I often call my trials my one-woman show. I'm the producer, the director, the screenwriter, the lead actor, and pull it all together and put on a show for the jury. And I love that. So I guess I'm a little bit of a performer myself, much like you are as as a stripper, disc jockey, and now radio host.
And now radio host. But of course, my number one priority is my law firm, as it is with you. But way back when you were getting into law, now you worked with Bela Lugosi, not Bela Lugosi, of course, but Lugosi, The Offspring,
I would
say, and the Three Stooges. You have a famous Three Stooges case. Were you still involved in rock and roll back then, or were you transitioned into this lawyer?
I was representing artists at that time. When I first got out of law school and still thought I was going to be a music lawyer, I was representing some baby artists. And I was also working on these trials, like the one for the Three Stooges, which was my very first trial as a first-year lawyer. And that case involved somebody's use of the Three Stooges image on posters and on T-shirts without their permission, without their heir's permission, and claimed that they had a First Amendment right to do so. And that case went all the way up to the California Supreme Court and has become seminal case law on the right of publicity and the tension with the First Amendment. And that really locked in my love for litigation and trying cases and really exploring kind of the outer edges and the outer boundaries of legal jurisprudence.
But weren't you a little bit intimidated. Here you are, a young lawyer. You'd been at UCLA Law School, and there you are on this big stage. Most of us don't get these big cases, especially so early in our career. Did you have ice in your veins, or was there some mentor who was helping you through this?
Well, you mentioned Bela Lugosi, who is the son of the Bela Lugosi who played Dracula in the very famous Dracula movie, and he really was a phenomenal mentor to me. He was the first person to really teach me how to try cases in the real world and gave me lots of independence and allowed me to go to court on my own and really learn the hard way how to try cases and how to conduct myself in a courtroom, even when he wasn't there to hold my hand, figuratively.
Right.
And coincidentally, another one of your former guests was my second mentor, Patty Glaser. One of the city's top entertainment litigators. And she was really my second mentor. And I learned to try cases from her, trying some really high profile cases against entertainment companies and for entertainment companies.
Yeah, she's amazing. She was on our show, spent an hour with us, and that firm, which you used to work for, we had Robert Shapiro on the show during the last summer. It's really a great training ground for an attorney, and then you move on, and now you're kind of running the show intellectual property department. Over at the Ackerman Firm?
Exactly, yes. I'm one of two intellectual property partners in Los Angeles. We have a much bigger intellectual property group in Chicago and Florida who do a lot of hard intellectual property. But our entertainment practice is really based in Los Angeles and New York, and we've got exciting clients and doing some really interesting work. And
you've had such a great track record. I know looking on the website, you can see all the successes you've had. We don't always have successes, but there's so many cases that you've been involved with, and especially some specific issues, right to publicity and those type of issues that a lot of people don't get exposed to. How have you been able to kind of carve out this niche in law?
Well, the Three Stooges case was seminal. And it was such a big case, and it was such a big development in the law that really put me on the map as a right of publicity lawyer and an entertainment litigator. And as a result, I've gotten to do really exciting cases. I took a case to trial for Nikki Sixx, the founder of Motley Crue.
And you know the history on the show about Nikki Sixx.
Yes, yes.
Carrie Kasem.
Yes.
Who you're sitting in for, co-hosted the show Sixth Sense with Nikki Sixx for...
Exactly. That's why I think it's funny that there's so many parallels here.
Yeah, yeah. So tell us about that Nikki Sixx case.
Well, it went to trial. We had a jury trial. We were suing Vans for using his image in the biggest ad campaign they had ever done at that point in time without his permission. And the case went to trial because we couldn't settle it. And the jury, first of all, juries love celebrities, but this jury especially loved Nikki because he's really smart, he's really charming, he's incredibly well-spoken.
Yes.
And even with the tattoos and the long hair, this jury just loved him. So we did very well at that trial, and it was a lot of fun because we had cameras in the courtroom. This was back in the days of the court TV show Celebrity
right.
Justice,
mm-hmm.
And so we were on Celebrity Justice every night. And there were cameras.
He was the superstar.
He was married to Donna DeRico at the time.
Yes.
And she would come to court, and all of their kids would come to court. And there were cameras following us in and out of the courtroom. So it was just a rock and roll circus.
Yeah, no,
so to
speak. You know, you talk about parallels. I lived before I was married. I lived next door to DJ Ashba. DJ Ashba is part of 6 a.m. Nikki Sixx.
Yes.
And he was in Guns N' Roses at the time. And Nikki Sixx was at his place all the time. So I was hanging out with Nikki Sixx, not in the same way that you were. But then Nikki Sixx, actually his girlfriend, moved in. It was a whole big thing. And you know how that goes when with these rock stars and with DJ Ashba, they were playing music. And he was very engaging. I can see how a jury would be taken.
He's so charismatic. I think you need to get him on this show.
Well, I don't know about that. We have to talk to Carrie because Carrie has a long history with him. And I know they're still friends, but I'm not sure that they're going to work together again. They may not. You know, you talk about some of these interesting things that you've done. I've done a lot of interesting things. One of the things that you you were known for back in, I guess it was 2009, on the CBS Morning Show. You talked about your experience with surgery on your body to improve your body, apparently, which I know at the time they said it needed no improvement whatsoever, with Dr. John Mallard. Is that who, Millard?
That's right. Yes.
And really, really kind of an interesting spot. I ask you because I did some stuff, you know, on television. I was on The Dating Game. I was on Love Connection. I was on Oprah. All of these things. Yet I was still a practicing attorney. Tell us about that experience that you did on the early show.
Well, the funny thing
morning
was...
CBS Morning Show, right?
The funny thing was I agreed to do this. I thought, sure, why not have free surgery? All I have to do is go on a TV show and talk about it.
Right.
And I didn't think very long and hard about how that would affect my career or my reputation. And all of a sudden, one day, I am standing on the set of the CBS Morning Show in New York in a bikini.
Yes, in a bikini.
And all of a sudden, I realized, oh, I'm going to be on national television in a bikini. And I thought, well, it's okay. Nobody I know watches the CBS Morning Show. And of course, within hours after doing it, everybody I knew had contacted me and said they'd seen it or heard about it or something like that. So there was a little bit of notoriety that I was not expecting. But, you know, all publicity is good publicity, right?
I don't know about that. So, yeah, I had that same experience with Oprah. I thought, no one watches Oprah. And then actually no one spoke to me after my Oprah appearance, and I had to go back on the show and apologize for everything that I've said. But it's not about me today. This is about you. I thought it was a wonderful little spot, and if people want to take a look, it is on YouTube, I think.
I think it is.
You can find it.
I haven't checked recently.
And it hasn't affected your career. You've been able to go move on and do very well as a trial attorney, and we appreciate you being with us today. We're going to take a break, and after the break, we're bringing on our guest, Charles Korsmo. Now, Charles Korsmo is just an interesting guy. He's a former child actor, and he became a lawyer, and now is a law professor. You will know him from a lot of the shows that he was in, the movies he was in as a child, and a brilliant guy. Went to Yale Law School and now professor at Case Western Reserve University School of Law. We're going to talk to Charles about his career as a child star and his career as a law professor. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Message and data rates may apply. Please do not text and drive. See purple.com for terms and conditions.
And now for an important announcement. Do you or does someone you know sweat the bed? Do you ever wake up feeling like you've been sleeping on a slip and slide? Sweating the bed is a serious but common problem that affects your sleep, health, and happiness. Plus, it's just plain gross. But it's not you. It's your mattress. Fortunately, there is a cure. It's called Purple. Purple is the only mattress with a scientifically engineered smart comfort grid. This patented technology is designed to let air flow freely so you sleep cool. Side effects of sleeping on Purple include sleeping better, feeling better, and, well, honestly, smelling better. Try the Purple mattress risk-free for 100 nights and never sweat the bed again. And right now, get $100 off the purchase of a mattress when you text SUPPORT to 84888. Yes, $100 off, but only when you text SUPPORT to 84888. That's SUPPORT to 84888.
Have you or someone you know been injured on the job? Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn lawyers understand that physical and emotional workplace injuries severely impact your life. You have rights when injured at work, but you need an advocate to avoid getting lost in the red tape of a broken system. Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn lawyers fully understand the complex workers' compensation system and will protect your rights if you've been injured on the job. RGW lawyers won't give up when the insurance company fails you, and they have years of experience with catastrophic injuries like brain injuries, strokes, chemical exposure, cancers, and death. RGW lawyers are compassionate and aggressive with over 40 years of advocacy for the rights of injured workers and have helped people change their lives with some of the largest settlements in California. You need someone in your corner if you're suffering from a work-related injury. Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn lawyers will fight to get you the medical treatment you need. A workplace injury can happen at any time. Put this number in your phone now. 855-4-RGW-LAW. 855-4-RGW-LAW or go to rgwlawfirm.com.
Got 2020 vision on 2020 AM 790 KABC.
Need some legal, moral, or just common sense advice from a friend? Call Alan Gervey and Kerry Kasem now at 800-222-KABC. That's 800-222-5222.
Oh, boy. I don't know if our guest is going to be thrilled about that. I'm not going to be singing it. Do you know this song, Caroline Menke?
I do know the song. I won't be singing it either.
Well, I think it's just lip-synced. That's what we can do, just lip-sync it. Oh, Kerry Kasem isn't here. If Kerry Kasem was here, she would definitely sing it. She loves singing, but she is on assignment. That's what I like to say. She's on assignment. I have no idea where she is. But we're fortunate today to have Caroline Menke with us. And we're going to talk right now to someone who knows a little bit more about Paradise City. This is Charles Korsmo. Now, Charles Korsmo is a former child actor, and he became a lawyer and is now a law professor. Last week, we had a lawyer who became a baker on. That was Warren Brown, who was on the Food Network. And now we're doing a little reversal, and we'll see if Charlie has the passion for being a law professor. As apparently last week, Warren Brown told us about being a baker. Now, you might know Charlie Korsmo from playing the son of Richard Dreyfuss in What About Bob, or the son of Robin Williams in Hook, the kid in Warren Beatty's Dick Tracy, and Chris O'Connell's brother in Men Don't Leave. And, of course, he was William Lichter in Can't Hardly Wait. That's where the Paradise City comes from. Went on to study at MIT and Yale Law School, and had a distinguished career as an attorney before becoming a professor at Case Western Reserve University School of Law. He was called one of the most brilliant teenage smart actors. In 2012, named 10 wicked smart actors. Let's talk to this wicked smart actor, now law professor, Charles Korsmo. Welcome to Gervey's Law.
I don't think I can live up to that introduction, but thank you. Thanks for having me. Pleasure to be here.
You absolutely can live up to it. You know,
sure.
After all of this, you know, I know now you have a family and everything. When you look back on your career or your careers, what do you feel most proud of?
Oh my goodness! I mean, I just turned 40, so it's a little early to have a total career retrospective at this point. I'm hoping the best is still ahead, frankly. But so far, you know, honestly, it's been a career that's been bookended by the two best jobs I've ever had, and that, you know, obviously being an actor as a kid was a real thrill, and has made everything else I've done in life possible. And now being a law professor is almost equally, not as glamorous, but also one of the best jobs you can possibly have, and that I have more freedom than I'd ever have as a lawyer. So in terms of pride, it's hard to look past my family at this point.
Right.
I'm proud of my kids. I'm not proud of myself.
Charles, have you stopped changing jobs? Are you gonna keep changing?
I was just saying to my wife, you know, this is the longest I've ever held down a job in my life. But I mean, you know, as an actor, you only hold down a job for 3 or 4 months at a time, and I kept that going well into adulthood. So I've been here 8 years now. I don't think I'm leaving anytime soon.
So you clerked.
Got to pay for my kids' tuition, so I can't.
That's
quit
true.
Anymore.
That's true.
Charles, you clerked for a Second Circuit judge out of law school. Have you ever thought about becoming a judge?
That they have to see. That's like, why don't you just do movies anymore? Well, they have to call me first, right? Yeah. If they call, I wouldn't hang up on them. I'll tell you that.
That's the actor spirit in you. If they called, you wouldn't hang up. Now, you know, you talk about these jobs and, you know, don't know where you're going to go. But when you did Can't Hardly Wait, you said that you weren't the first actor who was doing the role of William Lichter. Now, I know that they had talked about, who did they say that was going to do that part, or he started doing the part?
So, yeah.
Seth Green? Seth Green.
Honestly, I'm not, no, Seth Green was in the movie, but a different part. But it was, I'm not sure if I was supposed to tell anyone about this. this, but I figure 25 years have gone
Who cares, right?
Who cares anymore? Yeah, he landed on his feet. It was Adam Hahn Bird. I don't know if you remember the movie Little Man Tate.
Yes, of course.
Jodie Foster movie.
Yeah.
So it was that guy, and he, I guess he got hired, and then they, you know, they got a little bit into filming and decided they wanted to go a different way with it. And I parachuted in. I was on the parachute team.
Wow. You know, that's funny because a lot of times you don't know these things and then you get into the role and look, your whole life changes. That was really a role that kind of defined you. And we played Paradise City. You know, it really represented such motivation for nerds all over the world.
That's right. Nerd hero. That's right. Just how I wanted to be seen.
I'm sure you weren't one of those nerds.
Of being a nerd icon. Yeah, that's right. Well, actually, I mean, so at the time, I mean, it really came out of the blue. And that, I mean, the last thing I'd done was Hook when I was 13. And then I had quit, essentially, and I went to high school straight through did my first year in college, and then started thinking, you know, maybe being an actor wasn't such a bad idea after all. So I started sending in just audition tapes for random movies. And I sent in an audition tape that I filmed with a friend of mine in my dorm room for Can't Hardly Wait. Never heard a damn thing about it. And then 3 months later, they called and asked if I could be there on Tuesday. So,
who knew it could be that easy? Charles,
it's just that easy, folks. When you've got the talent, they find you.
Yeah, it's just so easy.
Charles, when you quit acting the first time, was it hard to reassimilate back into a high school environment? Did kids make fun of you? Did they treat you differently?
I was fortunate enough. I had been at the same school since second grade, so I'd been at the school before I did any of the acting. That sort of started in fourth and fifth grade. So I was gone for about 3 years, but my brothers were still at the school, so I was around. And so when I got back, yeah, it was weird, you know, probably for about a month. And after that, you know, the charm of it wears off, and you're back, another classmate. That's right.
You're back to being just a normal kid. Now, was that in Golden Valley, Minnesota?
It was, yeah.
Yeah, because, you know, I tell you, my first love was from Golden Valley. I lived in Winnipeg, up north, just north of Minneapolis, and for people who don't know what Golden Valley is.
That's right. My wife is Canadian, so.
Oh, really? She's not from Manitoba, is she?
When she's, unfortunately, no.
Oh, okay.
We went to Toronto, so Toronto. Everyone else in Canada hates Toronto. But
yeah, no, I'm going to be going to Toronto in 2 days, so that's where my family is now. They moved, so I don't hate Toronto, but, you know, we grew up on these trips from school going to Fargo, which was, I think, where you were born. And
I was born in Fargo. We'd go up to Winnipeg. That was the big city, so Minneapolis and Winnipeg were about equidistant from Fargo.
That's right.
We go into the big city.
We went to Fargo Moorhead. That was the big thing. But on a really great trip, went to Minneapolis. I met this girl named Amy Johnson, and we were just in love. And she wrote me all these letters. And in those days, you know, we got letters; they weren't emails. And she put like lipstick on the envelopes. And all I thought of whenever I thought of Golden Valley, I thought of Amy Johnson. But now. You've created a new scene for me, which is you in high school, going back from the movies, just integrating back into school in Minnesota.
Yeah, I started back midway through eighth grade. So,
did they try to recruit you for the school plays?
They didn't need to recruit me. I tried out.
Did you get the parts?
I usually got the parts. I didn't always get the parts. It spread the wealth around a little bit, but I got some good parts.
Were you doing any acting? Because you had done Hook before that, and that was a big film. And I know that you have talked a lot about that in the past. You talked about your relationship with Robin Williams. That was something that was fascinating to you, wasn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, I'd say the two questions I get most nowadays about the movie days were what was Robin Williams like and what was Bill Murray like, and what's interesting about that is that it's the answer is diametrically opposite, right? Bill Murray I mean, for both of them, right, the question is always, is he really like that in real life?
Yeah, right.
Is he really like that in real life? And I mean, the answer for Bill Murray is pretty much, yeah, what you see on screen is kind of the way the guy is in real life, which is both hilarious and I think for some people a little much. For me, yeah. As a 12-year-old, I loved being around him, but I think he's kind of a prickly fellow in real life. Whereas Robin Williams, the answer is absolutely no. He is was, I have to say now, not at all the wild and crazy high energy guy that you saw on screen. He was a very quiet, thoughtful. I guess you can't call Robin Williams an introvert, really, but I think that's really what he was. He was just a highly intelligent, really sweet guy who could turn it on when he needed to. But wow. I don't think that's who he really was.
How did you feel when you heard about his untimely passing? It must have really hurt you.
It did. And I mean, enough time has passed at this point. And obviously, I don't know anything any more than anyone else does as to what he was going through towards the end. I mean, I'm a little gratified, honestly, to hear that he was having, medical problems, that it wasn't, purely depression. But honestly, I wouldn't have been surprised if he had been. He was, as I say, a very sensitive, sensitive man. And, I wouldn't be surprised if he had been always a little bit on the melancholy side, but I guess he was also suffering from a real disease as well.
It makes you really think, because we saw the public persona. You had a chance to see him in a different light. It makes you realize that it's not always what it appears. And, I think that it makes us all feel a little more human to think about him. And I'm sure it's been tough for you to hear about, the problems that he had after he had had such an influence in your life.
Absolutely. I mean, he was, I don't want to exaggerate, obviously, but at the time, and Hook was a very long shoot. I was away from home for over 6 months, and you spend really all of your time with these people. And he was, almost a father figure to me at the time. So it was quite a shock to hear. And, as stupid as it sounds for someone that you haven't seen in 10 years or longer, you always wonder when something like this happens, was there anything I could have done to help? It's something that makes everyone that's ever known you feel helpless about it.
Yeah, that's really some real intuitive thoughts, and I know that it's emotional. We want to talk a little bit about your legal career. We have to take a quick break. There's a lot of things to cover. We're talking to Charles Korsmo, former child actor, now professor, Case Western Reserve University School of Law, and you're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Talk Radio 790, KABC News Update, I'm Steve Cumming. The rabbi from the synagogue in Poway, where yesterday's deadly shooting occurred, recounted the devastating event this afternoon. Rabbi Israel Goldstein recalled the moment when he walked into the building's banquet hall. He heard a loud bang, then turned around, and the suspect, 19-year-old John Ernest, began shooting at him, blowing off his fingers in the process. The rabbi said he didn't even realize he was injured, as his main focus was getting the children to safety.
My granddaughter, 4.5 years old, sees her grandpa with a bleeding hand, and she sees me screaming and shouting, "Get out, get out!" She didn't deserve to see her grandfather like this.
Meanwhile, Ernest has been booked on one count of first-degree murder and is also facing 3 counts of attempted first-degree murder. KABC SoCal weather, mostly cloudy tonight with a 20% chance of showers and thunderstorms after midnight and lows in the lower to mid-50s. More news coming up in 30 minutes, continuing coverage at KABC.com. I'm Steve Cumming, Talk Radio 790, KABC News.
Pop quiz. If you sell a home for $500,000, how much would a traditional real estate agent charge in commission?
If you guessed $25,000 to $30,000, you're right. But if you think that's the only way, you're wrong. This is why thousands of homeowners are making the switch to Rex. With Rex, you get a dedicated agent and a full-service experience at a fraction of the cost. Rex uses game-changing technology to cut out the middleman and save homeowners tens of thousands of dollars in fees. See if you qualify by calling 833-REX-HOME. That's 833-REX-HOME. Remember, this is your home. Why give an insane amount of equity away to an agent? Rex offers the lowest fee in the industry without skimping on service. You'll work with a licensed local expert with you every step of the way. Get the most out of your home. See if you qualify by calling 833-REX-HOME. 833-REX-HOME. That's 833-REX-HOME. DRE license 01976010. Minimum fee applies.
Hi everyone, Lou Manfredini here with another House Smarts Minute.
Like most, I'm sure, you'll be anxious to get to work on your garden the first sign of spring, but try to avoid doing too much until temps consistently are above 50 degrees to avoid disturbing any emerging stems. Then start to prepare your flower and veggie beds by removing debris, trimming back any dead perennial growth, and adding some compost and mulch. More information is available at HouseSmartsTV.com.
This week on Animal Radio.
Okay, so I got a nasty cold, which led me to think, can my cat get my cold?
What about my dog?
No.
Dr. Debbie will explain why only our ferrets can catch our cold.
Grab your pet and join us for Animal Radio, Sunday evening at 6:30 on KABC.
The workplace is a soap opera of relationships, rules, and labor violations. Hear about it Sunday evenings from 7 to 9 on Carl Gerber, Workplace Lawyer, right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
The beacon of common sense. AM 790 KABC.
Welcome back to Gerby's Law, turning Murphy's Law upside down on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Yeah, we are back. We are talking to Charlie Korsmo, sometimes referred to as Charles Korsmo, depending on how old he is at the time.
How seriously I want you to take me. That's
how seriously. You know, it's funny you say how seriously. I hate to inform you, Charles, but you aren't the first child actor lawyer turned lawyer that we've had on the show.
So, I know. It's an epidemic.
It is an epidemic.
A pandemic. A lot of people have made a series of escalating mistakes that have brought them into the legal profession, right?
But I got to tell you something. The guys that we have, and they have been two guys that have been on the show that were child actors, have been such really great people, very intelligent, and have their heads screwed on right. We hear so much about some of the actors. We had Corey Feldman on not too long ago. Nothing against Corey, but he certainly hadn't turned his life into what Jeff Cohn, who was Chunk from The Goonies. We had Jeff on.
Yeah, I was going to say, did you have Chunk and I'd guess Paul from The Wonder Years?
No, we didn't. We had Troy Slayton, who was Jerry Steiner on Parker Lewis Can't Lose.
Okay, there you go.
So that
there
was a go. Reach. But yeah, The Wonder Years, yeah, we have to get him next. But we did have we did have Chunk on, and he's a funny guy. He practices law here in Beverly Hills, and Troy Slayton does as well. He's in Beverly Hills as well, practicing law. But, you know, what you hear from these guys is that they really took the experience they had as a child actor and really made something of themselves and really avoided a lot of what we hear about some of the child actors who have kind of gone wrong or have gotten involved in drugs and some bad behavior. How were you able to keep your head on straight and move forward without succumbing to some of those issues?
Yeah, well, I was fortunate. I mean, as we mentioned earlier, I was born in Fargo, North Dakota, and I grew up there.
Wait a second, that says enough. Just say you were born in Fargo.
Exactly. I'm from Fargo. What could go wrong, really?
Go see the movie Fargo, and you can see some strange stuff.
Yes. Yeah, so incidentally, I was at the Fargo premiere of Fargo. When that came out, which was quite a scene, because about half of the crowd actually knew what they were getting into, and about half of the crowd was just sort of old Fargo grandees who had no idea, you know, oh, we're off to see the nice movie about Fargo. The first time the police officer gets shot in the face, the theater cleared out. I remember an 80-year-old woman walking past me going, what kind of movie is this? Anyway, those are the people I grew up with, and I think that more or less helped But I was very fortunate in that my family never actually moved to Los Angeles. My parents had their own careers. We weren't relying on me to support the family. I would only go out there when I was working, and I'd always have a parent or a family member who was staying with me. And between movies, I'd always go back to Minneapolis. And I got out at the right time. I quit when I was, or at least took a step back when I was 13. And I think it's a lot easier to get yourself in trouble at maybe 14 or 15 in Hollywood than it is to get yourself in trouble when you're 11 or 12 and have your Midwestern mom with you.
Charles, that must have been a lot of upheaval for your family to have you and a parent going out of town for months at a time while you're on movies. How did your brothers and your parents feel about that?
Well, I mean, my parents never pressured me about it at all. It was was my idea to start auditioning for things in the first place, and they were very supportive, but not pressuring. And we were fortunate enough; we had enough flexibility in the family that my mother could spend a lot of time. But yes, it was I'd say probably a little tough on my brothers. We would have my mother and my father and various grandparents sort of cycle in for a week at a time to spend with me. But I'm sure if you ask them, they'd say there might be a little bit of bitterness about the time devoted to it all. I'm sure they're over it by now.
They were proud. They were proud of you.
That's right. Just like all brothers, they were very proud of me at the age of 13. Anyway, I mean, that's how I stayed out of it, frankly. And even going into it, I never thought of acting as something I wanted to do as an adult and spend my life doing. I think I've viewed it mostly as a way to get out of middle school.
So did you have fans? Did you have a fan club?
We did have a fan club, actually, briefly. My brother administered the fan club.
Nice.
So we did, yeah. And I, for a while there, I got a lot of mail and everything else. We had all these grocery bags full of fan mail back in the day.
Did you take
somebody?
Go ahead.
Even had somebody show up in Fargo, actually, which was a little bit creepy. Who tracked me down? So that was a warning of what was to come if I stayed in that line of work.
What was the weirdest thing that a fan ever sent you or said to you?
Again, I had a person that actually showed up at a Cosmo family reunion in Fargo.
Oh, at a family reunion?
In person, right? So that was a bit of a scary experience.
Male or female?
Female, so maybe less scary than it could have been, I suppose.
Did she pretend to be part of your family?
No, she was. I mean, she was actually very sweet. It's just the whole, the whole idea of it is a little bit on the disconcerting side.
A little worse than a wedding crasher.
That's right. I'm sure we had those too.
So, Charlie, when you went to MIT, how did that go? I mean, obviously, you're new. It's new to college, and it's a great school. You got a lot of smart people there. Was anyone really impressed by you, or did they just treat you like another student?
Well, again, it's the kind of thing where, at first it seems like it's a great icebreaker, but if you know someone for, more than a few days, frankly, especially if I'm not doing anything actively at the time, right? If we're, if there's a bunch of hoopla surrounding you when a movie's coming out, I think that can be a bit overwhelming for people. But if you're just living in the dorm and going to physics class, there's only so long that anyone's all that impressed by the fact that you were in movies when you were 10.
So,
I was just going to say, because you reminded me of a story that happened to me when I was at school, and you're right, people start just doing their things. I was at Brown University, and I was sitting at the cafeteria there. I'm talking to this guy, and I didn't know who he was. And we were just talking, and I said, oh, I'm from Winnipeg, and we have a, we were talking about a cottage. I have a cottage at West Hawk Lake, which is in Lake of the Woods.
A cottage, yeah.
At Lake of the Woods. And
you're so Canadian. This is great. I feel like I'm talking to my father-in-law.
Right. This is very Canadian. And the funny thing was, is so he said, well, I'm from Minnesota. I said, oh, great, you're close. You're just down the street from the Lake of the Woods. And he says, yeah, me and my dad, we really like fishing and we like boating and everything. I said, well, you know, if you're in the neighborhood, I'm glad to have you. You can come up to our cottage over at West Hawk Lake and Lake of the Woods. And he said, okay, sounds great, whatever. We finished lunch. I walked away, and some kid comes up to me, and he says, you know Billy? And I said, no, he's just some guy there. He's a real nice guy. He's I invited him to come with his dad over to West Hawk Lake to our cottage. And the guy said, you just invited the Vice President of the United States to go to West Hawk Lake to go fishing with you? And I said, what do you mean? He said, well, that was Billy Mondale. Walter Mondale's son.
Well, there you go, right?
So, yeah.
Well, and frankly, I mean, that is, you talked about the other, you know, Chunk and the other lawyers you have on that have used it as a launch pad for their career. I mean, for me, I think the most important thing I got out of being an actor as a kid was, I got enough money to pay to go to school, which that is in absolute terms a very important thing to have been able to do. But second, you know, I learned at a very early age that people, even, you know, famous, rich people are not that different than anybody else. And you get a lot further with people if you don't put them on a pedestal, if you treat everyone treat everyone alike, and that's easy to do when you're doing it for the first time, when you're young enough not to be overawed by people and feel like you need something from them, or you're going to think you need something from them.
Well, you probably also got really good at memorizing, and that probably helped you in school.
Yeah. So now I can memorize my lectures and go in there on autopilot.
People must ask you all the time how your acting career helped you as a lawyer, but I'm curious whether your acting career helped you at all in studying physics.
As for studying physics, I don't think so, honestly. Honestly, that's a different kettle of fish.
Yeah, I would imagine. And has studying physics helped your legal career in any way?
Absolutely. I mean, on the one hand, I think it gives me sort of instant credibility with people, frankly. I mean, if you see that someone was an actor, and they, even if they, you know, went to a great school and, you know, got a degree in English or history or something, not that there's anything wrong with that, right? But there's always some suspicion that, sure, but they only got in because they were famous and all of that. Whereas I think people know you can't fake a physics degree.
Yeah, exactly.
Definitely.
So, it counteracts the fact that I can't hardly wait on my resume too when I apply for a job.
Well, that helps.
So you've broken a lot of molds, but one of the molds that you've broken is that most lawyers really don't have a lot of aptitude at math or science. So
these are the most lawyers in my experience.
That's true.
So I find it so interesting that when you came out of law school and after your clerkship, you went into corporate law and banking instead of patent law or product liability or something with a science bent. Why was that?
Yeah, I mean, as I said, I was half joking, but it's just a series of accidents, really, that have led me along my career. No 5-year plans at any point along the way. When I came out of MIT, I actually did think of going into science work. I moved to Washington, D.C. originally to work on missile defense, actually. And when I got there, this was back in 2000, Senator Jeffords switched parties, and control of the Senate flipped, and they canceled the funding for the program that I was going to be working on.
It's like having a show canceled.
Yeah, exactly. So I applied for a job at the patent office, and I was going to work there when
Someone called and offered me a job at the EPA, and I ended up going a totally different direction. Then that was supposed to start out as a science job too, but it sort of morphed into more of a policy job that led into more and more legal type work, which caused me to eventually go to law school.
Well,
but coming out of there, I didn't really have a plan other than that. I got a job at a good firm where they would give me flexibility in terms of what kind of work I would do. And I sort of gravitated towards the banking litigation.
And that was at Sullivan and Cromwell in New York?
Right.
Well, we got to take quick...
Doing God's work.
God's work. you can say that now. I love how happy professors are. Every professor we have on this program are just so happy they're not practicing.
They're not billing hours.
I had a doctor that gave me an EKG when I was working at Sullivan and Cromwell, and then I saw him 2 years later after I was a professor, and they gave me another EKG, and he said, "Did something drastic change in your life?" Yes, in fact, it did.
I think there's a lesson in there somewhere. We got to take
it's like quick. You're 10 years younger.
Yeah, exactly. You're going backwards instead of it's like Hook. You're going to be back in the movie soon. We got to take a quick break. It's so fascinating. We got one more segment. We're talking to Charlie Korsmo, professor at Case Western Reserve University School of Law, and you're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
Have you or someone you know been injured on the job? Rowan Gervie and Wynn Lawyers understand that physical and emotional workplace injuries severely impact your life. You have rights when injured at work, but you need an advocate to avoid getting lost in the red tape of a broken system. Rowan Gervie and Wynn Lawyers fully understand the complex workers' compensation system and will protect your rights if you've been injured on the job. RGW Lawyers won't give up when the insurance company fails you, and they have years of experience with catastrophic injuries like brain injuries, strokes, chemical exposure, cancers, and death. RGW Lawyers are compassionate and aggressive with over 40 years of advocacy for the rights of injured workers and have helped people change their lives with some of the largest settlements in California. You need someone in your corner if you're suffering from a work-related injury. Rowan Gervie and Wynn Lawyers will fight to get you the medical treatment you need. A workplace injury can happen at any time. Put this number in your phone now. 855-4-RGW-LAW. 855-4-RGW-LAW or go to rgwlawfirm.com.
Message and data rates may apply. Please do not text and drive. See purple.com for terms and conditions.
And now for an important announcement. Do you or does someone you know sweat the bed? Do you ever wake up feeling like you've been sleeping on a slip and slide? Sweating the bed is a serious but common problem that affects your sleep, health, and happiness. Plus, it's just plain gross. But it's not you. It's your mattress. Fortunately, there is a cure. It's called Purple. Purple is the only mattress with a scientifically engineered smart comfort grid. This patented technology is designed to let air flow freely so you sleep cool. Side effects of sleeping on Purple include sleeping better, feeling better, and, well, honestly, smelling better. Try the Purple mattress risk-free for 100 nights and never sweat the bed again. And right now, get $100 off the purchase of a mattress when you text SUPPORT to 84888. Yes, $100 off, but only when you text SUPPORT to 84888. That's SUPPORT to 84888.
Clear thinking. Free discussion. AM 790 KABC.
The glass is always half full when you're listening to Gervie's Law on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Yeah, and we're back. We're talking to Charles Korsmo, former child actor from Hook and from Can't Hardly Wait, What About Bob? A lot of movies, a lot of stuff. And now, after MIT and Yale Law School, professor at Case Western Reserve University School of Law. Now, Charlie, back in 2011, President Obama appointed you to the Board of Trustees of the Barry Goldwater Scholarship and Excellence of Education Foundation. How did that come about, and was that a surprise to you?
It was a bit of a surprise. I had kept contacts in Washington, D.C., and a friend of mine who had was involved in the appointments process for non-judicial executive branch appointments, and he sort of called me out of the blue, and said, you know, I was thinking of trying to get you on one of these commissions, and you know, we talked over a list of positions that might work, and ultimately that's where I ended up. And you know, the idea was, look, I've got a science background, and that's what the scholarship is for. It's for outstanding undergraduate science students to help them pursue a graduate career. So I've been on it ever since, and it's been a great honor to be on it.
Did you ever have the opportunity to meet President Obama or get involved at all?
I did not, unfortunately. I have never met a sitting or ex-president. I've only seen one from about 300 yards away.
But wait a second. You started this interview by saying you're young. You're only 40, so there's plenty of time for that.
Exactly. They don't come to Cleveland as often as I'd like, but yes, I'm sure at some point it'll happen.
So, Charles, what current actor today would play you in a biopic if you had your choice?
Oh, boy. Well, you know, Leonardo DiCaprio, I think.
Yeah, of course.
That's a good
obviously,
one.
Right?
Obviously.
Yeah.
Sure.
Exactly. Yeah, it's a spitting image, so.
But I don't know if he could pull off the lectures as a professor.
No, yeah, maybe not. I'm trying to think. I think, frankly, Paul from Wonder Years would probably have to play me.
Wait, he's going to be on our show next week. We just booked him. I'm kidding.
Yeah, cast him. A lot of times when people recognize me but don't know where they recognize me from, at least back in the day, a lot of the wrong guesses would be, were you on Wonder Years?
Yeah, right.
They thought I was Paul from Wonder Years. That's right.
Do the students that you teach now have any idea? Have they looked you up? Or, you know, are you impressed with them at all, or are they a bunch of idiots?
No comment. No, of course they're not. They're all idiots. I am impressed by them, but I am feeling more of a generation gap at this point. Than I was when I first started. I was only 30 when I started teaching classes.
Do they ask you about your acting career?
Well, they do now, right? So when I first started teaching, I'd say that the people were of an age where they all sort of grew up with those movies, and everyone knew who I was, and I was close enough in time to it that it seemed rather recent, and I think people were kind of nervous to ask me about it. And I was nervous to be asked about it, frankly. I mean, when you walk into a lecture hall with 80 students and you're, you know, only a little bit older than they are, and you can just smell that they're thinking, what is this guy doing up here? So the last thing I wanted to talk about was Can't Hardly Wait at that point.
Exactly.
I remember on my first teaching evaluations, one of them was complaining that he never addressed the elephant in the room, apparently referring to my acting career.
That's so funny. You know,
they're old enough, or they're young enough that, you know, they know who I am because they've heard who I am, but, you know, I don't think they really care.
But they can also watch the movies, so.
Exactly.
You know, I know if I was one of the students, I'd be really thrilled to have you as a professor. It sounds like you're entertaining and at the same time very smart, so you're informing them and teaching them. Charles Korsmo, we really appreciate the time you've spent with us here today on Gervie's Law. And
well, thank you very much for having me.
We'd love to have you back for a reunion show with all the other child actor lawyers in the future.
That's right.
That sounds great.
Get Seth Green on here too.
We'll get Seth. Yeah, he's local. He's local. We can get him to come in studio.
Yeah, he'll do anything for a buck.
Isn't he from Canada too? I think he is.
No, he's from Philadelphia.
Oh, come on. I wanted to claim him as a Canadian.
Yeah, sorry.
Oh, well, at least he's not from Fargo. Anyway, thanks for being with us.
All right, thank you.
All right, take care. Well, wow, Caroline. Wow,
that
went by
fast. That
was
fantastic. It went by so fast. He's so interesting.
Isn't he interesting? I could listen to him all day, as long as he's not talking about corporate law and corporate finance and everything.
I think we avoided that topic sufficiently.
I think we did. It's so nice to have you here, and
thank you for being here. Thank you, Alan. I really enjoyed it. This was so much fun.
So much fun. And good luck with everything. We're looking forward to hearing about some of the great cases that you're trying. Maybe another Supreme Court case coming up.
Let's hope.
All right. That's going to do it for this week on Gervie's Law. I want to thank you for listening, and we will be back here, same time, same channel, next week. I can't get enough of you, baby.
This show furnished by Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn.